Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest today is the Queen of Suspense, Mary Higgins Clark. She's out with a brand new book, I've Got My Eyes on You. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Simon & Schuster. In this book, there's 18-year-old Carrie Dowling, who is found dead at the bottom of the family pool. And she's had a party where her parents were away. Her boyfriend is the obvious suspect. And then suspicion turns to an intellectually disabled neighbor, Jamie, who was slighted. He wasn't invited to the party. Carrie's sister is a high school guidance counselor. She teams up with a detective assigned to the case to try to solve the mystery. And the suspense ensues from there. Mary, this story takes place in Saddle River, New Jersey. It's kind of known as one of the wealthiest communities in the country. What attracted you to this location to set the story, other than the fact that you live there?
Well, as you say, I live there, and I thought it would be interesting to have one. I don't usually use an upscale setting, but I thought we are a town of very nice people, but of course, when you have young children, you know, an 18-year-old, it's always that worry if you go away for a weekend and they throw a party, you know, with all the warnings, don't do it. They do it, and usually can clean up very well afterwards. But this time, the parents come back after being away overnight, and the place is an absolute mess. And then the daughter isn't home, and the sister goes out to the patio and looks down, and her sister, her 18-year-old sister, is at the bottom of the pool. And I thought, there's nothing worse than losing a child. That's the one thing I've always begged God, don't do that to me. And to find your younger daughter dead, and then who did it? Who hurt her? Is the question. And of course, who all was at the party? What was going on there? And they find out that one of the boys who's going to be leaving for Princeton had a bitter fight with her. There is a disabled boy who wanted to go to the party and she didn't invite him and who was angry. There is a girl who is so jealous of her and likes the boyfriend. So you kind of wonder, was it any of those? And, of course, that's what makes a story.
Over the years, with your books, and this book is no exception, you've killed characters off through violent means, but the books themselves are not violent. And this technique has been described as Hitchcockian. You know, you don't see the murder happen, but you'll see a guy's leg from behind a door. Why is it so important for you to write this way?
Well, because I don't like explicit violence. I never did, and from day one, and I've never liked explicit sex. I mean, you read some books and you think you're in someone's annual physical, and I don't want to be there. So I've always felt you can tell a good story with and lead to a point and leave it to the imagination. And so far, it's worked for me.
Your books don't generally start off with any smoking gun clues for the readers, and you seem to develop the characters first. How fully developed are the characters in your mind or on paper before you actually start putting them into the book form?
Oh, I have to know them. I do a biography of them, where they went to school, of course, how old they are, what is their background, you know, were they friendly or were they standoffish? It's very important because you can't bring a person to life until you see his or her life and know how they think and what they feel. I rewrite the first 50 pages of my book over and over, and I frequently say this is not working. I might as well throw it out. In fact, I'm married 22 years, widow, widower, and the first year we were married, John said to my son, I'm worried about your mother. The book she's working on isn't working, and she's nervous about it, and she's going to throw it out. It was my daughter. And Patty said to him, oh, for God's sake, we've heard this over 20 books. She'll get over it, which I do. But I do feel you must know your characters. You can't just say, oh, this one is a teacher or this one is that. You just have to know their background. And for example, in this one, the sister, who's 28, is a guidance counselor. So I called a guidance counselor I knew to be sure that the school would do this and when she would be able to get into the files. I had a police detective who I called to make sure that when their murder occurs, the police are acting as they would. For example, they call the prosecutor's office immediately if they see a blow on the head. And then when the medical examiner comes, and when they call in that the girl is dead, they will give the symptoms. And in the prosecutor's office, they will say, she's flat, meaning that she's gone. So, and then if they want to talk to a suspect, you don't just arrest them. You invite him to come in and speak. You invite him to give you his phone. They don't just take it. So I like to keep the legitimate details of what it is, what it would be to be arrested and to be literally in jail overnight. And I did find a young fellow who had a problem with drugs, and he's well over it now. But he could describe to me, you wait, and they give you a bologna sandwich with one slice of bologna on it. This is when you're waiting to be transferred to jail. So I wanted all those visuals in it so that I thought, what gives flavor and authenticity to a story?
Well, part of what makes this story go is Carrie's sister, the guidance counselor, who gets together with the detective and tries to solve it. Do detectives in general like family members getting involved like that, or is that more of a pain in the butt for them than anything?
Oh, well, my daughter is a judge, head of criminal court, and she said, be careful. Well, if you see, the only time they really get together is when either he asks her a question or she has something to say to him. But you can sense the growing relationship between them. So that isn't solved until the end.
When you write, I know that you write out longhand now because your arthritis prevents you from typing. How does that change the editing process in your mind where you can't just hit backspace and you have to do a lot of crossing out when you edit?
Well, that always is a nuisance because then I have it typed. And whoever is typing it is coming back. What does this balloon mean? Which means I've inserted something or another. But now I've gotten to the point where I can do a lot of straight dictating. And that's a big help. And then when I see it in type, then it's easy, of course, to edit.
So you're actually writing the book, just speaking it to someone on the typewriter?
Yes. My son is a great help. He had an advertising business, which he closed recently. And he's a very good idea man. He would say, would she have said that? You know, questions that are really meaningful. So he's been a great help with me in the last couple of books to get it down straight.
Well, this
it's always nice to have someone as a sounding board. And so that has gone very well for me.
All right. Well, I know it's gone well for your readers, too, and this book's no exception. This is I've Got My Eyes on You by Mary Higgins Clark. It's her latest offering. It's available now from, of course, Simon & Schuster. That's where she does all of her stuff. Mary, fantastic book. Thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Oh, lovely to be with you, and thanks so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Can't take my eyes